William and Dear Little Peter. William had accompanied his mother on a visit to Aunt Ellen. Mrs. Brown was recovering from an attack of influenza, and the doctor had ordered a change. William had not accompanied her because his presence was in any way likely to help her convalescence. He accompanied her solely because the rest of the family refused to be left in charge of him. William was bored by Aunt Ellen. She had suggested many ways in which he might spend his first afternoon with her while his mother rested. He might sit in the garden and read. She'd rather he didn't go outside the garden alone because he might meet rough boys, and she was sure his dear mother was most particular whom he met. She gave him a book called Little Peter, the Sunshine of the Home, and put a chair for him in the garden. "It's a beautiful book, William," she said, "and I think it will do you good. It's a true book written by the boy's mother. He's a beautiful character. It might prove the turning point in your life. I'm sure you'll wish you knew Peter and his dear mother." William, after reading a few pages, began, as she had predicted, to wish he knew Peter and his mother. He wished he knew Peter in order to take the curl out of that butter-coloured hair and the fatuous smile from the complacent little mouth that stared at him from every illustration. Driven at last to fury, he dropped Peter down the well and was just beginning to look for more congenial occupations when he heard Aunt Ellen's footsteps approaching. "William, darling, have you finished the book?" said William non-committally. "You must read very quickly, darling. I'll get you another. I have another book about Peter you'll be glad to hear." William coughed politely.
Thanks, he said. I don't just feel like any more reading. I'd like more to do something. I'm tired of doing nothing."
She looked at him helplessly.
"Well, darling, do you think a little walk would do you good?"
"I don't mind," said William.
He started off down the road, walking slowly and dejectedly, his hands in his pockets. A week of sheer boredom lay ahead of him. He didn't know any boys here. He didn't want to know any boys in a place like this. They were probably all Peters. He felt a burning hatred of Peter. He wouldn't mind meeting Peter. Soon he tired of walking along the high road. He decided to crawl through a hole in the hedge and found himself in someone's garden. He didn't care. He was in the reckless mood of the outlaw. He walked across the lawn and up to the house. He didn't care. He'd like to see anyone turn him out. Through an open window, he could see a room and a man sitting at a writing desk. On the desk were many typewritten manuscripts and several copies of a magazine, The Monthly Signal, a magazine for mothers. But it was not on these that William fastened his gaze. It was on a pile of books from whose covers the simpering, curly-haired face of the hateful Peter looked out upon the world. The man was reading a letter. There was a look of fear upon his face. Suddenly he looked up and met William's unflinching gaze. They stared at each other for a few moments. Then the man put down the letter and ran from the room. Obviously it was the sight of William that had moved him. In a less defiant mood towards the world in general, William might have taken to his heels. Now he stood his ground, frowning ferociously as the man came out of his front door. But his ferocity was not needed.
"I say," began the man, "do you live near here?"
William's frown did not relax.
"Stay in here." "Well, look," said the man, "could you help me? Just for this afternoon, I'll give you a shilling, 2 shillings, 10 shillings, anything. You can come to this garden any day you like, as long as you stay here. You can bird's nest in the wood. I've got a boy's tricycle you can have, and you can do anything you like in the garden. There's a pond behind the house. If you'll help me out, just for this afternoon." "I'd do anything for those things," said William. "Well, come in," said the man nervously. "There's not much time. She'll be here any moment. When she comes, I want you to pretend you're called Peter and I'm your mother. Do you see?"
William was outraged.
"Me? Peter? That boy? But he's a charming boy. Everyone says so. I could show you letters." "He's more like a monkey out of the zoo than a boy," said William bitterly.
But the mental vision of the pond, the tricycle, the wood, the garden, the 10 shillings, allowed him to pocket his pride.
"I'll do it if you never tell anyone I pretended to be him. Well, very well. There's no time to argue. She may be here any minute. I shan't be here. You must see her alone. Say you're Peter. You're the wrong type, really, but still. You must say that this is your home, and your mother's in bed with a bad headache and is sorry she can't receive her. And then she'll go away. Come and tell me when she's gone, you see? All right, agreed William.
A tall, angular figure was coming up the drive. The man fled into the house with a groan. Mr. Monckton was a literary man. Well, that is to say, he wrote the mother's page for the Monthly Signal, a magazine for mothers. He signed it Peter's Mother. The page always centred on Peter. Peter's mother told how she dealt with Peter's illnesses and how she arranged Peter's parties and treats and lessons and holidays and what sweet things Peter said and did and thought. Mothers wrote to Peter's mother, care of the Office Monthly Signal, for advice about John or Henry or Jimmy or even Anne. Success went to Mr. Monckton Graham's head. He wrote a book about Peter. It was wildly popular. He wrote another. It was still more wildly popular. Mothers sent letters and flowers and presents and photographs. Someone had even sent a tricycle to Peter. Mr. Monckton Graham wrote letters of thanks in a round and childish hand. But last week his usual discretion had deserted him. He'd written to an admirer of Peter, giving the name of the village and house where he lived, and the woman had written to say that she was coming to see darling Peter's mother that very day. William remained at the front door till the tall, angular figure reached it.
"Good morning, little boy."
"Ahem," said William.
"What's your name, dear?"
"Peter."
"Peter? Surely not."
William felt slightly annoyed.
That curly hair, what I had, all came off. Got clawed off by a monkey at the zoo. They took me home bald, and the next day it grew again, but a bit different."
"Oh, how terrible,"
murmured the visitor, shutting her eyes.
"Wasn't your dear mother sad when it grew that colour?"
"No, she likes this colour."
"Oh, that's so like her to pretend to you that she likes it. Somehow you're quite different in every way from what I expected. Well, shall we go in to your dear mother? She expects me, I believe. My name is Miss Rubina Strange."
Oh, said William. She's ill. She said I was to tell you. She can't see you."
"Ill? Oh, I'm so sorry. Perhaps I could do something for her."
No, you can't. No one can. It's too late."
"Good heavens! She's not..."
Yes. Yeah, she's dying, all right."
"Oh, but can't anything be done? I must just come into the house. There's surely something I can do."
William followed her into the house. Mr. Monckton Graham had not expected this. He'd been lurking in his study till Miss Rubina Strange should depart. But there was no sign of him when Miss Rubina Strange entered. She looked round the room with the air of a pilgrim visiting a holy place.
"Oh, my dear, to think that I see it with my poor unworthy eyes. Is this the pen she writes with? And is this the blotting paper she actually uses? Oh, Peter, dear, do you think I could take just a corner of it? Just a corner? Oh."
She raised her long, thin nose and sniffed.
"Peter, dear, there's just a faint smell of... Surely your dear mother doesn't smoke cigarettes?"
No, said William absently. "It was a pipe he was smoking."
"He? Oh, your poor mind is unhinged," said Miss Rubina soothingly. "Worry of your mother's illness, which I'm sure you exaggerate, darling."
Mr. Monckton Graham was growing uncomfortable under the table. He stirred uneasily and noisily, and Miss Rubina Strange turned startled eyes to William, then placed her finger on her lips. She took a long, narrow tablecloth from an occasional table. She found a length of picture cord in a drawer. She took an ornamental dagger from a cabinet and a cushion from an armchair. Mr. Monckton Graham felt a sudden and violent attack in the rear. He was dragged out forcibly, and before he could remonstrate, his feet were firmly tied together, and a tall, thin female, evidently possessed of unusual strength, leaned over him threateningly with a dagger in one hand.
"Utter one word and I will strike. You've come to rob a woman who is a dear friend of mine, of every woman, and if necessary, I will take extreme measures."
Mr. Monckton Graham knew that the dagger had a nasty, sharp point. He therefore made no sound while she tied the cushion over his face and pinioned his arms to his side with the picture cord. Then she turned to William.
"Which is your mother's room?"
"Never mind. I'll soon find her."
Before Mr. Monckton Graham could writhe himself free from his bonds, Miss Strange, looking wild and dishevelled, returned.
"She's gone! She's not in the house, not in any of the bedrooms. What shall we do?"
At this point, with a bellow of rage, Mr. Graham managed to shake off his cushion.
"I am not a burglar. Please leave my house."
"Your house?"
She turned to William.
"I didn't know your father was alive."
She then turned to the still writhing Mr. Monckton Graham.
"Where is your wife?"
"I haven't got any wife."
"But who wrote?"
"I wrote," he yelled.
Then Peter's mother?"
"There isn't any Peter's mother."
"Oh, my poor man."
She placed a kind hand on William's head.
"Poor little orphan Peter."
"There isn't any Peter. There isn't any Peter's mother. There's only me. You've nearly throttled me, you've nearly suffocated me, and you've nearly knifed me. Would you mind going away?"
Miss Robina Strange, baffled for the first time that afternoon, sat down weakly.
"But I don't understand."
When she did understand, she did not sweep out of the room in disgust, as he'd hoped she would. Instead, she looked at him with bright eyes.
"But how wonderful of you," she said. "Of course I will keep your dear secret. What sympathy and understanding of a woman's heart you've shown. It's all the more wonderful that you are a man. And we are friends, are we not? Old friends. We must have a chat. Let me tidy up a little first. Oh, the room needs a woman's touch. There are so many things I want to ask you and to tell you. Ours will be a very beautiful friendship."
Mr. Monckton Graham threw a pathetic and pleading look at William.
I'd better go now," said William. "You won't forget those things you promised me, will you?"
No,
said Mr. Graham, whose spirit was broken.
"No, we mustn't be shy of each other,"
continued Miss Strange, in low, confidential tones.
"My friends call me Ruby."
Mr. Monckton Graham's face was the face of a man in the depths of despair. After tea, William's mother was anxious to know how William had spent his afternoon.
"Oh, I met a man," he said casually, "who's going to let me play in his garden, and he's given me a tricycle and some money."
"Oh, where does he live, dear?" said Aunt Ellen.
At the end of the road."
"Oh, I know. It's a beautiful big garden, not like mine, I'm afraid. You're a very lucky boy, William."
"But I can't think why."
"He must have taken a fancy to William," said William's mother. "Some people do."
"Now I must find you something to read, dear," went on Aunt Helen to William's mother. "I've got some perfectly charming books I know you'll love. They're all about a little boy, such a dear, called Peter. They're written by his mother. They're perfectly true. I lent one to William this afternoon, didn't I, William, darling?"
Yes.
"They're so beautiful that they make me want to cry whenever I read them. Did dear little Peter make you want to cry, William? There are some things our William might learn from Peter."
With all his faults, William knew when to keep his own counsel. He merely winked at the cat.